Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is Thursday, August 10th, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. It's really the wee small hours of the morning on August 11th, but I'm here in Zurich. So for most of you in North America, it's probably still the 10th. I'm headed out to the Bregenz Festival at Lake Constance tomorrow. I'm going to see Carmen on the floating stage. I can't wait. Then headed down to Verona to hear Beethoven, and then to the Austrian Alps. I'll be road tripping with Ulrich Groniger and one of her colleagues who helps with the Pista Sofia workshop, so I'm very excited. I just came from Santa Fe, where I saw the opera. Actually, it's an operetta, Die Fledermaus, Johann Strauss's really lovely story. Die Fledermaus means the bat. And I realized watching that that I've really lost my inner frivolity. The news is really way too serious, so I'm committed to finding more frivolity. But if you want to share in some, we're going to be doing a boating and lunch with Catherine in Friesland up in the Netherlands in the last week of August. We'll send out an announcement. It's been in the update, but we'll send out one just for that. It's open to the public, so tell your friends in the Netherlands or in Europe who would be interested to come ahead. You can sign up for tickets on the left-hand side of Salieri.com. Our theme tonight is, while Global 3.0 accelerates, Global 2.0 has its uses. If you don't know what Global 3.0, Global 2.0 is, I really encourage you. We'll put up the new second quarter wrap-up PDF by Monday, and there's a section called Salieri Core Concepts and Long-Term Trends, and it's to help you find some of the key materials in the archives that will help you help you understand some of the concepts that we use to describe events. We did a lot of work. This is a great PDF. So if you haven't looked at the web presentation, you definitely want to print out and read this PDF. I really encourage folks who don't get the hard copy, feel free to take that PDF down to Kinko's or print it out on a color printer, because it's really a remarkable document, all the wrap-ups are. But back to why Global 2.0 has its uses, there was a great story from Reuters this week. The title was Cyber Threats Prompt Return of Radio for Ship Navigation. And it comes back to him always pounding the drums. These systems have zero integrity. Well, the ships have learned they don't want to depend on GPS and satellite. They're going back to radio. So it's a very telling reminder that Global 3.0 does not have integrity, or the systems, many of these systems do not have integrity, and they're not human friendly, and there's lots of rejection happening. It's going to keep on coming. Where it works, it's fabulous. I posted a link to a video that Alibaba did on one of its new fresh food markets, very high tech, but also very high touch, remarkable combination. These things are like two tsunamis headed each other. The need to get human productivity and the Internet of Things, and it's a major clash. The equity market looked very strong last week. It was moving up parallel to, if you look at the dates that the Bohemian Grove started, it was remarkable how things were changing. And I watched that very closely, because this is the first meeting of the Grove after two things. One is David Rockefeller's death in March, but also the Bush family being sidelined in the 2016 election. That means arguably the top two people are turning over, and that presents a big window to allow lots of change, both in the establishment and in their policy. So I all indications are to me that that something is definitely up, and that something is being driven by the allowing of technology out of the closet, and the extent to which Global 3.0 is now starting up the S-curve. Certainly the Amazon Whole Foods deal was a ringing of the bell that that S-curve is happening. If you didn't get that, if you didn't hear that bell, I put up a link to a new patent or a story about a new patent from Amazon where it's on their transportation and delivery mechanisms, including the fact that setting them up to deliver directly from spaceships. So you heard it here first. By the way, again, in the second quarter wrap-up PDF, there's a we keep updating and working on that list of space companies. So there's a new update, and our topics editor has done a fabulous job of keeping pruning, developing that list. So I hope you take advantage of it. Despite the hard turndown that came in the equity markets this week, I still think all these signs are indication that the fundamental equity bull has a lot more to go. But as you know, I'm a great believer that we're in for major correction. So maybe it's here. We'll see. Money and markets. The markets were down hard the last 2 days. First 1% down or greater, I think, in 58 days. That's a long time. A lot of this is in response to the drumbeats of war, specifically between the U.S. and North Korea. If you look at what's up, it's what I call the Richard Mayberry portfolio, named after Richard Mayberry, the newsletter writer. But gold was up and the defense stocks were up, and that's definitely a Richard Mayberry portfolio. Let's just run down how the market did. U.S. dollar index now down almost 9% for the year. It's still holding that critical 92 line, and as long as we've maintained that line, I consider us still in a strong dollar scenario. TLT, the long treasury ETF, up 7, a little bit more than 7.5%. The intermediate now up 3.57%. Both of those show a firming in that market as the gold up, defense stocks up, and fixed income or treasury markets up. The bond aggregate now up 3%, and junk backing off, as you would expect in this kind of scenario, down to 4% up this year. Equities, we've seen, as I said, a 1% or more drop across the board. The S&P now up 10%, the home builders up 12.5%, Lockheed Martin, lead defense contractor, and lead U.S. contractor up 15%. I never like to see that. I never like to see the defense contractors doing well in the broad economy falling. VGK, the European ETF, dropped way back down to 19% up for the year. Still a very strong performance, but nothing like where it was. Germany back down, all the way to 16.27%. It dove through the 50-day moving average towards the 200-day moving average. Most of the stocks in the market are falling back towards their 50-day moving average, which is why Germany is so noticeable. Developed markets, less North America, now up 18% for the year. The China large cap up almost 21%. Small cap up 21.5%. Emerging markets have dropped again way back, but they're still the star performer, up 22.88% so far this year. Commodities now down 5.5% for the year. Gold, big improvement, up 11.5%, and silver very strongly up 7.8%. Silver had two very good days, and oil now down 19.59% for the year. Make no mistake about it, what you're looking at is the U.S. In the broadest strokes, trying to surround Russia and surround China, and as we can see, China doesn't like it. The war drums with North Korea are really about the U.S. encircling and trying to maintain the unipolar empire vis-a-vis China. But clearly we see real tensions this week between the U.S. and North Korea, and those have papered over, the headlines have papered over the real tensions between India and Korea, which is arguably a much more dangerous sort of situation. U.S. destroyers now establishing sea lanes off the artificial islands. They're doing sea lane patrol in the South China Sea, and sort of the combination of North Korea, India, and destroyers means that China's no doubt feeling the pressure. I posted last week a very intelligent analysis of the USS Fitzgerald incident by one of Joseph's Giza Death Star members. And if you read it, essentially he was saying he thought it was an attack by the Chinese. And it's the first analysis I've seen of the USS Fitzgerald that makes sense. So I think the tensions and the sort of hot war with China are certainly becoming more intense now. What is it all about? In reality, I think you've heard me say that the U.S. started to get really establish itself and establish the dollar as a global presence when it got control many, many years ago of the sea lanes in the Caribbean. Same thing for China. China wants to build out a reserve currency or a globally liquid currency. They don't even have a globally liquid currency, but they're trying to build it out. Step one is to establish hegemony in the South China Sea. So in reality, this is really about reserve currency status. Now, if you look at all of our allies in Asia, the question is, are they going to play ball with us, or are they going to give up on us and switch over to China? And we really are at a tipping point. If the U.S. wants to maintain the dollar as the reserve currency, then it has to remain the hegemon in this area. If they don't, that's going to be a very big shift to the multipolar world. So this question of pivoting to the South China Sea is an important one. Now, in North Korea, U.S. military action makes absolutely no sense. But there's no way that diplomatic actions will work without the military option really being ready, willing, and able to be taken. But my expectation is that diplomatic actions will work. If you only have time to watch one video from last week, I strongly recommend you watch Tillerson's press conference to give an overview of what's sort of going on, America's role in the world, and what our foreign policies are, and what the State Department is doing around the world. It's really an amazingly competent and compelling presentation. And I got the same feeling watching it as I got when I watched Sir James Goldsmith, which was how remarkable it would be if the qualified people among us were our leaders. I must say the sort of communication relationships between Kelly McMaster, Madison Tillerson are good ones. And I think, agree with them or not, they're highly competent to manage what is before us with a team. So it's gratifying. It's very gratifying to see Tillerson in its state. And I'm going to talk a little bit about more of that in a second. You certainly have sections of the internet that are very spooked about the eclipse coming up on August 21st, as well as the astrology and how that relates to the market. I'm not much of an astrologer, but I appreciate that on August 21st, lots of people are going to be looking to see what the eclipse means, if anything. Mueller continues to waste our money and time. He's trying to, because there really is not much there on the Russian story, he's trying to broaden his look into Trump finances, and it will be absolutely, to me, completely lawless if he succeeds at that. He just did a pre-dawn raid on Manafort's house, Paul Manafort, who had worked for a brief time as the campaign manager and does have business ties in the Ukraine. In what I would describe as a very bad sign for taxpayers, Manafort announced that he was dropping Wilmer Hale as his attorney and picking up a boutique firm. Wilmer Hale represents Jared Kushner, and this is the kind of move that would be made if Wilmer Hale had told him, okay, you have to get somebody else to represent you, or Manafort decided to do a deal with the prosecutors. I just finished reading a very interesting book called License to Lie. I'll put up a review of it on sometime before or after Labor Day by a former prosecutor, Sidney Powell, and includes, among the other things, the story of prosecutors going after Senator Ted Stevens. Frightening, absolutely frightening story. But it's about Department of Justice prosecutors who falsify evidence and use their authority to frame people falsely. And the most lethal combination in the world is Sheriff of Nottingham culture with the powers of the Department of Justice. So watching Mueller pursue this is frightening, to say the least. Anyway, so if Manafort makes a deal, it'll be interesting. But to me, again, it's another underscoring event, underscoring what I call the Midianite thing. From my one experience with Roger Stone, which I've talked about on the Salir Report before, everything I heard, the reputation was that Black Manafort and Stone, which was their firm, it was Roger Stone and Paul Manafort together in sort of a political campaign and lobbying activity. What I always heard was Black Manafort and Stone harmed a lot of people using a lot of dirty tricks. So whatever is happening, Paul Manafort is certainly dealing with his karma, is what it looks and feels like to me. We are updating, by the way, the DOD and HUD missing money. We have more updates to do. And thanks to Dr. Skidmore and his students, it turns out they're finding more HUD missing money. And once we get our current presentation a little bit more developed, we're going to be developing a new web presentation. I think that phenomena is so critical to everything that's happening in Washington that I just want to keep communicating with people about that. Richard Dolan has a new series on false flags. I put up a recommendation this week. It's being published on Gaia. You have to subscribe to see it, but I absolutely think it's worth subscribing. If you don't want to do that, we have a great interview with him on false flags in the archive. And I think understanding the false flag phenomenon is very, very important to understanding our world. Our hero this night is, again, Rex Tillerson. His nickname is now T-Rex. I think that's quite clever. Again, he did a one-hour briefing at State and sort of basically said, I've been here 6 months. I think it's appropriate to give you an overview of what's going on and where our work and focus is. I believe Tillerson is the most capable of the Trump cabinet. There's some other plenty capable people here, but I think he's the most. He doesn't have any government experience, which is why it's such an extraordinary shift for him to make. At the same time as chairman of Exxon, and an engineer coming up the ladder at Exxon, he would clearly understand dealing with major national security issues. If you read Jim Norman, Exxon's been dealing with major national security issues for generations. One of the things I think that makes Tillerson so capable is he's an engineer. And he's been dealing with doing business with governments all around the world, including in very risky and difficult environments, both politically and environmentally and physically. If you look at power recently in the United States, it comes from Hollywood, Silicon Valley, Wall Street, and Washington, which all deal with abstract assets. If you notice, we've got a whole team between Tillerson, Mattis, McMaster, and Kelly. These are all people who deal with the concrete. And it's important to understand that central control is implemented by physical control. Now, yes, it's backed up by significant invisible technology, surveillance, and weaponry. But right now, our world is controlled physically. And if you're going to deal with the kind of change that is before us, you need people who understand both the abstract and the concrete world. They have to be masters of the concrete world. I did a cartoon that was in the infrastructure wrap-up, and we've republished it since then, that basically said, if you want to have a financial coup d'etat, then yes, you want your government run by lawyers who can help you engineer all the theft. But once the time comes to go back to running things competently, you need people who, you know, basically need to out with the lawyers and in with the engineers. And that's in part what you're seeing with Tillerson. But the other thing I would watch it is, reason I would really watch that 1 hour video is it gives you a very good sense that the adults are back. I mean, when you are doing things like what you were doing with the Clintons, people like Tillerson are not going to stick around and do that. They're just not going to have anything to do with that. And so, you know, unless you're going to run something a certain way, you're not going to, those guys aren't going to be back. But it's a very good sign that Tillerson is in the room. Let's go to the movies. I put up Rick Burns' New York, a documentary film. In fact, it's a series of seven, and I believe he's working on publishing subsequent ones. The reason I wanted you to see this is it's got a remarkable description of the work of Jane Jacobs and the extent to which these big public projects with big government and both federal and state money really can destroy an economy. And it's a very, very important insight and very appropriate to our interview. And it's very well done. Now, you know, as someone who lived in New York for 11 years and always fascinated by New York City, and whose firm worked for the Bob Moses financing many of those projects once upon a time, I'm very interested in New York. But I think it's a very important insight that you get in that movie. By the way, you also get some very remarkable insight into the Triangle Fire of 1911, and it shows you that the 9/11 playbook was not entirely new. In fact, if you watch what happened with the Triangle Fire, the playbook is over a century old, if not longer. Our interview is a remarkable interview, and I recommend it to you strongly. I was thrilled to find Chuck Marone, who is the head of Strongtown. Let me just quick read you a part of their mission statement. For the United States to be a prosperous country, it must have strong cities, towns, and neighborhoods. Enduring prosperity for our communities cannot be artificially created from the outside, but must be built from within incrementally over time. Chuck Marone was an engineer who was working with municipalities and discovered what he calls the growth Ponzi scheme, which is getting big piles of federal money and then building things that make the economy weaker. I mean, it's one example after another of the negative return on investment, which I talk about. But Chuck has created Strong Towns, which is now going around the country helping towns turn this around. And it's simply a wonderful story of what can be done and how to do it. It's really a bottom-up way at going at sort of what's going on. And what's interesting, it's the same phenomena you see in Europe. I'm reading the book, in fact, called Adults in the Room by the former Greek finance minister. And sure enough, what you realize is the EU came in with these big infrastructure projects, making big loans in Southern Europe, and basically created a whole infrastructure of things that weren't economic. It's, you know, think of too much federal money as a form of financial invasion and not, you know, not in the best interests of those who are receiving the investment. Anyway, a very important interview. If you're interested in making your city or town strong, you definitely want to tap into Strong Towns. They have an update list you can sign up, and you can also become a member. But first, I would encourage you to listen to it. It's very inspiring and very helpful. Okay, ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. I so appreciate the Solaria website and all the valuable info during these precarious times. Please be aware of an extremely disturbing occurrence around the SDR coin special drawing rights. China has been tasked with bringing out the market SDR, which is supposed to implement the official SDR. The market SDR will hold title to all tangible assets internationally. I'm copying Brad Peter's quote below. If a global crypto coin controlled by the Bank of International Settlements comes to internationalize property onto their crypto blockchain, they can get their one world government and one world currency all in the same stroke. This is your 1988-2018 Prediction Economist magazine cover. A Singapore company has now digitized 900 acres of property in Dallas, Texas, to build residential homes. These coins are not available to U.S. citizens. Lynette Zhang has publicized these points on SGTB report most recently. I don't understand a lot about blockchain and crypto, but this all sounds really bad. Okay, so you have to be very careful when you discuss these topics because you're connecting a lot of dots that may not connect, or the way the connection is being made is not accurate and is not sound in the short run. Now, if you look at the fears in the long run, I think many of them are totally legitimate. But let me just step through a couple points. If we use cryptocurrency in a centrally controlled system that is combined with the Internet of Things, let alone conferring some kind of property rights, yes, cryptocurrency is extremely dangerous, and it is at the core of a slavery system. So if you haven't seen the Aaron Rousseau interview with InfoWars that I'm always trying to get you to do, it's posted up at Solaria. I strongly recommend that you watch it. Now, we are very far, far away from a global SDR system that is liquid, let alone that with global currencies pegged to the SDR. China just got into the SDR system. Their currency only represents about 10% of the float. Also, if physical control, again, is the basis of control, this is why the South China Sea issues are at the heart of whether China has a role in building out a currency that has global liquidity, let alone could shift the U.S. dollar position as the reserve currency. So this is why, to a certain extent, what is happening in the South China Sea is a lot more important than what is happening with cryptocurrencies. The organization or the cryptocurrency mentioned in the interview has no relationship that I can tell with Bank of China or any governmental organization. So I wouldn't jump to any conclusion that one is connected to the other. I think that's a bit of a stretch. I also, I can't imagine, I've never seen any proof or evidence to indicate that the SDR system is going to hold title to all tangible assets on the planet. What you're basically saying is that 100% of assets owned by publicly traded corporations or government who have securities existed or issued globally would be transferred in complete violation of the right of the security holders to into some kind of IMF system. I don't see how that works. I mean, what you're talking about is destroying all property rights of all corporations and individuals globally and all collateral rights of all security holders. I just, that's not going to happen. Or if it is, it's going to take hundreds of years. So now, is there a danger that you try and securitize everything that hasn't been securitized yet and do it through the IMF? Yes. But I think, you know, we're talking about mammoth changes to every national and international legal system in the world. So I would be very careful before jumping to that conclusion. I will also tell you that my one experience with Ethereum was that the domain on the system was leased, not controlled. So talk about a no integrity system. It was stunning. Now I have more work to do. I'm giving a presentation at a cryptocurrency conference in September, and I'm hoping to use that as an opportunity to really sit down and organize my thoughts about what brings integrity to a financial system and what would have to happen for cryptocurrencies to develop something that would have financial integrity. But right now we're looking at a very young system and growing. Now, if you look at how much money is poured in with the bubble this year, it's tremendous. So the market cap of cryptocurrencies is clearly growing. And the question is, can Can we bring integrity to them, and can they facilitate decentralization as opposed to implementing a global slavery system? Now, here's what's important, which is, I think, the deeper meaning behind people's fear of global resets or fear of, China running the world through a cryptocurrency. And that is, China is growing towards matching us in terms of per capita income. And all of East Asia is growing in matching us in terms of per capita income. That means that China is now the biggest market, and their digital economy is rocking the world in terms of its growth and its size relative to the U.S. and Europe. So there's no doubt that there is, when it comes to the general economy, there is a reset happening, but it's been happening for the last 10 years and is going to keep on happening. One comment from one subscriber, which I thought was pretty cute. So here it is, the blockchain debt for equity swap. This is why they want the Internet of Things, so they can digitize every asset produced in every garden, garage, farm, Etsy shop, etc. What people need to know is, how can you instantiate an ownership in a digitized world with zero paper trail? I think you mean substantiate. Anyway, I posted a link to a study from 1996 where governments were, or the powers that be, were contemplating getting out of bank deposit insurance by using cryptocurrencies. You have no idea what an enormous commitment and responsibility bank deposit insurance is to the general population. And if they could tear it up, ooh, we are not better off at all. I also posted a testimony of the FDIC vice chairman, or description of testimony by the FDIC vice chairman, complaining that the banks are not lending. They're using the power of the federal credit to do what Catherine always calls federal credit arbitrage. So they use the taxpayer credit to raise deposits, and then they invest it in taxpayer guaranteed securities, and they make a fixed profit. And instead of loaning any money to people who need a bank, they are instead using that money to buy back their stock and pay out dividends. What a surprise. If you read the Dylan Reed story at dylanreedandco.com, you'll see more examples of that. It's been going on a long time. I've been writing about it for a long time. Catherine, I really enjoyed the Salieri report. My wife and I have a substantial amount of money in a whole life insurance policy. The company is 150 years old. How safe our insurance company is going to be considering the upcoming reset? Thank you. It depends on the company and their portfolio. I would need to know a lot more to make a underwriting. It's not underwriting individual companies is not something I do on the Salieri report. It's because that's investment advice. I'm not sure what you mean by the coming reset. I would be careful in assuming something called the coming reset. In fact, things have been resetting every day for the last 20 years, particularly since 1996, 1995, the implementation of the World Trade Organization. So beware scenarios that have you suckered into the great global reset. Now, here are what your issues are. One is the company credit. What is the credit worthiness of your insurance company over a long time, particularly if interest rates keep staying low and really putting insurance companies in a bad model? That's number one. And the second is, what will the purchasing power of your dollar be? Because this is a major investment denominated in dollars. So you have two issues. One is, do you want to be in the equivalent of fixed income? Because that's what, whereas equities or gold or silver will protect you, or hopefully will protect you for some inflation. Something like a whole life insurance policy will not do that. Now, that's why you want to have balance and you want to have diversification. The way I approach these things is scenario planning, and I would really encourage you to see the last annual wrap-up. I like to develop scenarios, some of which could be the dollar strong, some could be the dollar's weak, and you want to make sure you're fine in either scenario and your portfolio is balanced to handle the different scenarios. So we have a great Solera report on scenario planning, and then we do scenario planning every year. I use those scenarios both for strategic planning for the Solera report as well as portfolio strategy for my other company, Solera Investment Advisory Services. Next question. In the midst of the fear, the escalating war rhetoric from North Korea, renewed threats of nuclear war, haven't felt this upset since high school. The sense of lost U.S. government sanity and the grave uncertainty for my children's future. I just listened to a wonderful, hopeful message from London, Paul and the Rogue Morning Report, and then they put in the link. I was inspired to share. Maybe it might be useful for others like me who are trying to stay out of the deep pit of funk. And thank you, too, for your terrific efforts at keeping us informed and hopeful. It is greatly appreciated. I'm a new subscriber, gift from my husband, really enjoying it, and stay-at-home wife and mother trying to make sense of the world. What a great husband. That's so great. Okay, well, I hope it's very helpful. I took a link and listened to the first 15 minutes of the London Paul on the Rogue Morning Report. It sounded quite solid. He was very clear. The way to solve these problems are with, certainly with North Korea, is with negotiation. The more tense problem is the real underlying fight with China. And, of course, the U.S. desire to remain a sort of unipolar, running a unipolar world, when obviously this is moving to the fundamental economics of globalization are moving us to multipolar. So be very concerned about the fear porn and understand a lot of the screaming going back in the headlines is either people trying to get attention, that's what sells media, or the defense industry and the military industrial complex just trying to justify massive, you know, appropriations in military spending. So you need to, what I hope to do on the Solera report is to help you understand the real risk issues. But your fellow from London is right. This, what's going on with North Korea really needs diplomatic solutions. You know, preemptive strikes won't work. But as I said, if you're going to negotiate, you have to be willing to back it up. But the big battle right now is U.S. hegemony in East Asia and the difficulty of doing that, given the explosive growth and having 1.3 billion people move to equivalent per capita income. Hi, Catherine. There was a question for Jason. Jason Bowden Smith's suggestions about grounding and morning sunlight exposure are working brilliantly for me. I can't thank you both enough for bringing them to my attention. My concern is that chemtrails I'm getting in my area are compromising the quality of sunlight. Would you mind asking Jason his opinion on this? Also, would appreciate advice on how to measure UV light quality. I think such data would prove valuable at this point. I've sent him that question. I'll get it. I'll post it if I get the answer. Second question, in the documentary, The Truth About Vaccines, someone makes the claim that the pharmaceutical industry has the number one most powerful, well-funded lobby in Washington, even beating the energy lobby. Can you recommend any good website or books I can use to verify this statement? Also wondering whether the defense contractors stand in the picture. Aren't they the most powerful industry in the U.S.? My experience was that insurance was the most powerful. Ultimately, you know, think of the planet as a house. You've got a mortgage and then you've got insurance. And if your insurance is no good, then your equity is no good. So generally, I found insurance companies as the risk management to be the most powerful. But of course, it was the intelligence agencies and the secret societies which were controlling. If you want a sense of that, I would read David Talbot's The Devil's Chessboard or listen to our interview with him. It's a very good sense of it. The website to go to, if you want to understand who's the most powerful, you want to look at total donations and total PAC dollars by industry. And you can get that by looking at opensecrets.org. It is always a great idea to look at who's funding whom when it comes to donations and PACs, and Open Secrets will allow you to manipulate the data in relational ways. And I never go there where I don't learn some more amazing answer to the question, qui bono, who benefits? And it's funny, there's a great line from FBI Anon. I put up FBI Anon's interview about the Clinton Foundation and the campaign, and one of the things, one question they got was, why does Hillary Clinton want war with Russia? And he said, well, that's because that's what her donations paid her to do. So literally, the donations are basically buying war. So they bought Haiti. They bought Libya. That's what regime change is. You pay somebody to engineer regime change, and then you make a great deal of money out of it. Catherine, your 19-minute video summary with Cynthia McKinney was very powerful with its graphic overlay. It must have been time-consuming and costly, but it brought clarity to your discussion. With 9/11 approaching, I thought you might be interested in a slide that was used in 2009 to justify troop buildups in Afghanistan. The article by The Guardian conveys brilliant minds, bringing clarity to a complex subject. When we understand that slide, we will have won the war. I met the man who spent a year at the Santa Fe Institute who tried to simplify this chart using chaos theory. Anyway, so he sends a picture of, or a link to the article in The Guardian, which has the chart. It reminds me of my expression, pretzel talk. Everybody in Washington is talking in circles and spirals and everything's going which way, but they never cut to the chase. And that's because if you look at what they're doing to keep the red button from being pushed, if what they're doing to make money, you know, so they're being paid donations to start wars. And the wars, of course, have a negative return on investment to the taxpayer and are destroying and killing people in the world. So they can't tell the truth. So, you know, nobody can say, make a chart that says, okay, one, we won hegemony on the Silk Road and maintain a unipolar empire and make sure China and Russia and Germany don't get together. We want to build a very profitable business doing narcotic sales into the Soviet Union. We want to control gas sales to Europe, whether coming from Israel or coming from from Eurasia. And finally, there are all sorts of rare earths and other natural resources we can mine for cheap here. So how do we get all these and get this done at the lowest price? Instead, we just talk pretzel talk. Catherine, as the construction people are doing repairs in the White House, wouldn't be a good time to check for any electronic bugs that may have been placed there? Absolutely. Last week, you shared about the power of the tongue, Proverbs 18:21. Thank you for doing that. Tongue creates a vibration and energy we should all be aware of. Ever notice that most curse words have a hard and heavy sound to them? Yep, low vibration. Yeah, I agree. Although sometimes I can't stand it and I have to use one of those low vibration words. Hi, Catherine. Several months back, you had commented on putting together a list of socially responsible companies to invest in. Did you have a chance to complete that? Yes, I've now done a screen and we've done a soft launch with a money manager I'm working with. But when I'm ready to announce it, I expect to announce it this coming fall, but that will come from my other company. It's not part of the Solari report. What is part of a Solari report is we did a complete, we're working on that complete sort of maintaining a complete list of space companies. And we republished it in the second quarter wrap up, and great kudo to our top picks editor, Brad Edens, who's been done a really faithful job of helping me search and keep that list going. Do you have any insights or comments on the lending practices of the Congressional Credit Union? Nope, that one I've avoided. Hello, Catherine. Love you. Love all your work, to say the least. Website, little overwhelming, mostly in a good way. All is incredible, incredible info. Only so much time to peruse to find my largest priority since signing up, and that is finding a local, if possible, credit union. Great idea. I heard Penn Fed was good, but not local. I'm open to not local, but I can't find the best one here. I live in San Clemente. I would check out the piece we wrote called How to Find a Good Local Bank. It's up at Solari.com. You can pick it up on a search. We also did two audios, but I don't know that area, so I can't tell you which is the best one. What I would do, though, is I would check with the local CPAs to see what, first I'd get a list of all of them. I'd go through a process of trying to figure out which was the best for me. Part of that is you've got to walk in, meet them, and get a feel for whether you'd feel comfortable there. But if you know any of the local CPAs, I would absolutely check with them, because they are going to be the ones who will probably know. If you cannot find a good local one, it's fine to use a regional one. And of course, I use a great local bank, but it's about 1,000 miles away, and I have no problem dealing electronically and doing everything with them. But it would be wonderful to have one locally that you could just go drive and visit and deal with on a person-to-person basis. Okay, that's it in closing. Next week, a very significant interview with Dr. Cynthia McKinney. Because the sanctions bill passed, I wanted her to come back and brief us on what it meant, and it's not so wonderful. But it is what it is, and she's fearless and inspiring, and it was a great conversation. August 24th, winning the fight for health freedom with Scott Tipps. I wanted you to hear what Scott and the National Health Federation are up to. Very inspiring story, just like McKinney. These are very inspiring people. Now it's August. It's vacation time for the Solari team, so there are no money in markets scheduled for the last 2 weeks of the month. So I'll be talking with you next week, but then not till after Labor Day on the 7th. So no money in markets scheduled for the last 2 weeks. Normally it's not scheduled for the last week. So this month it's going to be two. If there is something important, I will jump on and do a short audio. And then August 31st, I'll be talking with Thomas Meyer from Basel, Switzerland. I'll be taking the train over to see him in Basel. And so we'll get him back. Everyone loved his first interview. He's an anthroposophist, and we'll be talking about what Steiner can do to help us with what we're dealing with today. So that's what's coming up. McKinney, Tipps, and Meyer, a great lineup for the month of August. And I just hope you guys take some time to rest and relax this month, because we're going to have a busy fall and summer. It's summer. It's now the time to do it before the sweater weather comes. So until I talk to you next week, both money and markets and a conversation with Cynthia McKinney, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.